from the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
Welcome to the On Next Podcast. Powered by DuckSouth.com. I'm J. Paul Jackson, and for our midweek podcast today, I'll be joined by my co-host, the flamboyant one, Mr. Rocky LaFleur. And we also have joining us here in about 15 minutes, a really, really good friend, a member of the Hardcore Pro staff, and one of the best duck hunters I know from the Great White North, Mr. Scott Rumble from Ontario, Canada. But first, I want to say hi and welcome, Rocky. Great to be on here with you, buddy.
Yeah, man. I tell you what, this is the first time that I have not been in the Duck South Studios when we have recorded a podcast. So this is pretty cool for me. You know, you're usually the one on the road when we're recording, but today I'm having to be on the road like you.
Yeah, I'm driving up I-55 right now, about to be headed through St. Louis.
Oh, wow. I'm on 55. That's pretty crazy, but I'm a lot further south.
You know, it's really crazy. Everybody that listens to the podcast, of course, knows our co-host, Josh Webb, that I think is picking cotton right now and couldn't be with us today. But the last time I made this trip a couple of weeks ago, Josh was 5 miles behind me. And we had no idea until he passed the Dyersburg exit, took a picture with his phone and sent it to me and said, "Where are you? This is where I'm at." And I'm like, "Hey, I'm 10 miles in front of you or 5 miles in front of you." So,
oh,
crazy,
wow.
Isn't it?
That is nuts. Hey,
yeah,
hey, listen,
really enjoyed.
Let me tell you about my road trip yesterday. I actually made a road trip over. I was in Oxford and stayed over last night and the night before. I've been two nights in Oxford. But anyway, I made the road trip over to Tunica, Mississippi yesterday. And you know the place that I went to in Tunica. It is called the Blue and White. Have you ever eaten that before?
Yeah. Of course. Hey, if you've hunted anywhere from Tunica Cutoff to, you know, the rice fields around there, flooded bean fields, we once drove up from Crowder to eat lunch at the Blue and White. Yeah, it is just, it's kind of like the Varsity there in Belzona close to Morgan City. It's one of those, you know, meat and three or blue plate special kind of places that absolutely caters to duck hunters. As a matter of fact, the Blue and White probably, in my opinion, caters to their duck hunters better than any other cafe that I may have been to in the Delta. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Let me tell you a couple of things about the Blue and White and the respect that they have for duck hunters and the duck hunting community. And what I learned in this article that'll be coming out in tomorrow's newsletter, as we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, the podcast and the newsletter will be coming out at the same time. But let me tell you a few things I learned about the Blue and White. One, the 2 months that duck season is open in December and January, they actually open an hour earlier than normal just to cater to the duck hunting community. They open at 4 o'clock. You can stop by
you
before
go.
You go out. Yeah. And I'll tell you how respected they are in the duck hunting community. And this is in the article that for tomorrow, but R&T loves the blue and white so much, they made the blue and white their own duck calls and sent them a box of them.
Wow. But that just validates what I was saying earlier. They do cater, I mean, to open an hour earlier during duck season, you know, it's pretty obvious. And, of course, you know, Jim Ronquist is such a class act. That doesn't surprise me. But that is pretty cool that R&T went so far as to make the blue and white their own duck call.
Yeah,
and I'm
they sent them a whole box of their blue and white, and then they have the blue and white in the logo on the side of the call.
Cool. That's really neat stuff. And if you're a listener, if you're hunting up around Tunica, you have got to check this place out. Or if you're just driving through, I mean, they have a great lunch every single day. I've been there for breakfast. I've been there for lunch. You know, if I'm driving down the highway, I think that's US 61 that they're on. If I'm driving down US 61, I'm going to stop at the Blue and White and have a meal.
Yeah, their breakfast, man, they're known for their breakfast just as much as they are for their lunch. But they were named one of Duck South's top duck dives. And like I said, that article and video will be coming out, well, it's tomorrow right now, in the newsletter. You'll be able to see and read about the Blue and White tomorrow. But, hey, speaking of the newsletter, let me ask you this.
Hang on. Before you get off the Blue and White, I've got a question for you. I just had an epiphany. You know, a thought that just randomly popped in my head as an idea. I need to qualify it first, though, and ask you this first. Has there ever been a thread on the forums that was just about name your favorite dive, diner, or other place to eat while you're duck hunting?
You know, I'm gonna have to research that. I'm sure there has to be. I'm sure
well,
there has
hasn't,
to be. I'll
check create
on that.
One. Let's create one, because this winter I'm going to be traveling a lot through the Mississippi Delta. I'm going to be hunting with a lot of the different DuckSouth.com guys, and I think it'd be really cool to have a little dive and diner trail, duck dive and diner trail this winter, where we hit as many of them as we possibly can on the list, and give a little bit of critique about that. So, guys, if you will, go DuckSouth.com. Let's do it on the Waterfowl Forum. Best duck dive juke joint out there, and give us your feedback on that. All right, Rocky, move on, buddy.
That's a great idea. That's a really good idea. Hey,
thank you.
Speaking
I have
of
one of those every once in a while.
Speaking of the newsletter, one of the things that I'm talking about in my article I write for the newsletter tomorrow is I'm finishing up an article about actually picking a duck guide. And that's something that's going on right now through a lot of duck hunters, especially in the Southeast, or, you know, wherever they may be traveling from, to Arkansas, Mississippi, or Louisiana. They're trying to decide what duck guide to go with. J. Paul, you have hunted with a lot of duck guides. What characteristics make a really good duck guide?
You know, you've asked me one that I'm probably as qualified as anybody in the country to answer. That was a good one, because I have. It's funny, I was thinking about it while you were phrasing your question. Of course, you've hunted with a few guides also, but for the last 20 years, you've mainly been guiding and an outfitter. You know, I spent 5 or 6, maybe 8 or 10 years guiding, and then I've spent the last 10 years being guided most of the time when I'm in the field. Usually if I'm in the field for the last 10 years, I've been being guided. And I figured it up the other day, Rocky, I've hunted in 27, and I'm not saying this bragging, please. Don't anybody bash on my narcissistic ass for that. That's not why I'm bringing this in. I'm bringing it in because I have seen a lot. I mean, I don't want to get bashed on for that. I've hunted in 27 different states and 4 Canadian provinces, and almost every one of those places has been with a guide. And so I think that there are a few things that I've learned that I really want to share, because I think it would be valuable. You know, number one, there are, when you're booking a guide, certain things that you need to have as red flags. You know, in filming a television series, and I'm about to embark on my 8th year of doing this, in filming a television series, a lot of times I'll call a guide and I'll be talking to him and I'll be like, well, man, tell me what the hunting is like. You know, tell me exactly where we're going to be going and what I can expect. And the red flags that you will hear are things like this. We have a tremendous lunch. When you're trying to talk to him about how good the killing is, he's trying to talk to you about the food. When he says something like, and man, at the end of the day, you know, we'll drive over to the roost and you're going to see a real show of those birds coming in to where they're roosting on us. Anything that takes the emphasis off of the harvesting of birds and puts it on other things generally should be, hey, what he's trying to say is, we don't always kill a lot of birds, so I've got some other cool stuff that I'm going to show you, so maybe you'll be happy. Does that make sense, Rocky?
Oh, it does. It does. But I'm going to have a tad bit of a disagreement with you because, and I know what you're going to say when I say this, but I think one of the characteristics of a really good guide is to provide really good food.
Oh, no, and I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm not saying, and food probably wasn't even a good example. I'm saying, you know, when he talks about all the ducks that you're going to see, or talks about all the geese that you're going to see, or talks about how, you know, beautiful it is to deflect from specific questions, you know, about hunting. That should be a red flag. Another thing is you shouldn't even have to ask a good guide what to expect or what you're going to need. A good guide should be telling you during your interview process on the phone, and Rocky LaFleur, I know you do this. I've watched you do it with people. I love your whiteboard that you have in the gun and boot room. By the way, if you ever go to Mossy Island Outfitters, you need to stop by. His boot room is adjacent to the studio there in Morgan City, on the next studio for the podcast. And Rocky's got a list of 10, I would call them pet peeves or frequently asked questions. I think it's really a combination of both. But
I think it's. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I just think it's me being a smartass.
Well, when you say things like, I think number 9 is, remember, if you fart in your waders, you're gonna have to deal with it sooner or later. You know, or yes, that is a lake. Behind the deal, yeah,
no,
I think so.
you would not believe how many people walk up to my lodge. No kidding. Let me go through them real fast with you. And after doing this for 20 years, I just figured it'd be easier to put these on a board because every new client asks this. But they walk up, they look in between the lodge and the dining hall. Hey, man, is that a lake back there? Like, nope. And then they see the bridge going across Mossy Lake, and they, is that a bridge? Nope. And anyway, you know, it's always the same questions over and over. But anyway, I love my new clients. Don't get me wrong. It's just it makes it easier for me where I don't have to go through the same answers. And I'm gonna tell you something though, Jay Paul. I know
but
a
you
laugh
make it
and joke. Yeah, I know I laugh and joke about being a smart aleck, but, you know, the thing about it is my clients, I've got about a 75% return client base, and I'm very proud of that. And I have a great time with my clients, and I think that's why they come back. They enjoy that. I'm a really nice guy. I think that I am, but, you know, some things I'm just a smart aleck about.
No, everybody that knows you does say you're a really nice guy. Rocky LaFleur, you guys, if you haven't met him, he is a really, really nice guy. And I really appreciate you mentioning that 75% return rate about your own lodge, because that kind of deflected my narcissism over to you. So that was a good thing to do. But to bring us back on point, yeah, sorry to throw you under the bus, brother. But to bring us back on point, you also, because I've seen you do this, have good information. And you've got some of it on your whiteboard. You know, yes, we do shoot shovelers and we do eat shovelers. But I've heard you telling people, hey, we shoot a variety. You don't blow smoke up their butt about it's going to be all, you know, big greenheads, you know, dropping out of the heavens. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. A good guy, when you're doing your initial conversation to you know, I call it your discovery. Whenever you're booking a hunt with a guy, there should be a discovery conversation where you're learning and feeling them out. There are red flags that you should look for, like the ones I mentioned earlier when you're asking about, you know, hey, tell us about the harvest. Oh, man, you know, we kill a lot of ducks, but if we don't, you know, we're gonna see a bunch of them this evening. You know, you'll be able to sit back and drink a beer on the patio and watch them pour into the corn. You know, well, that's great, but you can't shoot them after shooting hours pouring into the corn. So, you know, that's a red flag in the discovery process.
No, hey. I'm going to stop you for a second, but one of the red flags that I actually wrote in the first part of this article was about the duck numbers. Listen, when you're talking to somebody on the phone, go with your gut instinct. When somebody's talking, telling you that, man, that like J. Paul said, the mallards are falling out of heaven, that should, you know, if your gut tells you, hey, this guy may not be telling the truth, he's probably not. He is probably not telling you the truth. So J. Paul made a really good point. It's just it hadn't been that way in 15 years.
Right.
You know,
I mean, you got it.
Those days.
You know, you want guys that are realistic with you. Say, hey, I can give you some references. We keep a log. You know, ask if they keep a log. You know, ask them to take a couple screenshots of it and send it to you so you can take a look. You know, when you're booking, you want to be sure and ask them about the time of year and if they've got numbers for that time of year, you know, because remember,
wow,
most
J.
of these
Paul,
guys.
That's, J. Paul, that is awesome, man. I've never thought about doing, you know, I keep really detailed records there at Mossy Island Outfitters, and I've never thought about that. You could ask, because most everybody keeps records. If they're a reputable guy, they're keeping records of what they're killing, you know, what they're shooting. They're taking pictures every day. That is awesome, J. Paul. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that.
Think about it from my perspective, Rocky. When I'm booking a hunt to film it, and I'm spending, you know, thousands of dollars on a, you know, I mean, it costs me at least a couple $1,000s a day for the camera crew, all of our expenses and everything when we're out on the road filming. So if I'm spending that kind of money, I want to know. I want to know, are they, just because they want to be on TV, are they telling me, oh, yeah, come on, man, you know, that's a great time? Or, you know, do they have history behind it? They can confirm that. The other thing in that discovery process is you want them to be providing you with information. And that's what I was saying that you do so well, Rocky. You know, if a guide is telling you, hey, this is, you know, when we do the best, and if you come during that time of the year, this is what you need to expect. You know, you need to bring knee boots and waders. Sometimes we may be, you know, needing waders, but hey, don't bring just waders, because sometimes we need knee boots, or, you know, we just walk right into the blind. Well, who wants to be standing in a nice heated blind all day in chest waders because they didn't bring anything else in the way of footwear because their guide didn't tell them to, you know? They ought to be able to tell you what you're going to need license-wise, and they ought to volunteer that right off the bat. You know, I'm looking for somebody that is not afraid to tell me, hey, you know, we stop when we shoot the limit. You know, this is our parameters. So you're looking for those kinds of things in that discovery. The more information that they give you, probably the more experienced they are and the better they are at their craft. And then, you know, you also want to take a look at the big picture of what this guy's operation is. I mean, there are guys out there that I've known who are guides who, you know, they went out and they leased the pit for $5,000 for a season. And, you know, they're booking hunts all winter long, living off of that because, you know, they're really not very good at anything. And they can con people into hunting with them once. And great question, Rocky, you just hit on was ask what their return rate is. When a guy tells you he's got a 75% return rate on his clients, man, okay, he must be doing something right because people keep coming back. Guy's got high turnover? He's probably not. Those are the things that I look at when I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to go, you know, are they throwing up red flags? Are they knowledgeable and providing me with plenty of information? Do they have a record for that time of year? Can they validate, quantify the results? And, you know, how long have they been doing it? What's their overall reputation? Look at the big picture.
Well, I will tell you this, Jay Paul, two of them that you brought up that I would like to make a comment on was, one of them is references. Man, references mm-hmm. should be when toward the end of a conversation before agreeing to booking a hunt. That should be something that you should ask every single guide for, references, because if they're a reputable business, they have return clients that hunt with them every year. And those are the guys that I want to talk to, is people that hunt with them multiple years. And because they've seen the good, they've seen the bad, and they mm-hmm. can, you know, that I want to talk to that person. So I'm going to ask for references that have hunted with them for multiple years. But two, yep. one of them you said earlier in the conversation, and to elaborate on it a little bit more, but I call them a fast talker. In 20 years, I'm going to tell you something, Jay Paul, just in the state of Mississippi, I've probably seen, I'm going to say at least 10 to 15 guide services that came in, lasted a couple of years, and they were gone. And you've probably sure. seen that in Arkansas and, you know, west side of Tennessee. But, you know, and one of the things that all these people always tell me about a lot of these, that they end up coming back and hunting with me. But a lot of the times they tell me is they were fast talkers. You ever heard somebody mm-hmm. called a fast talker or heard that reference to somebody, hey, there, watch out for
oh,
them,
gosh,
they're a fast
yeah.
talker. And,
yeah.
you know, a lot of these guys were fast talkers.
Sure. Sure. And I mean, you know,
fast talkers usually aren't good businessmen.
Yep. Yep, you're exactly right. You know, if it sounds like he's selling snake oil, beware. You know, people that just tell you what you want to hear, guides that just tell you exactly what you want to hear before you go with them. And that gives me one that I thought of while you were talking just then also, Rock. I'll give you a real good example of this. I know of a guide service that I've hunted with. They have an ad in the back of Ducks Unlimited magazine. It's been there for 20 years. They've been around for 20 years, maybe 25. So you would think, you know, but in their ad, the banner is there outside of Stuttgart, and they hunt green timber. Well, this guide service, I know for a fact, hasn't had a spot to hunt in green timber since they outlawed guiding on public land in Arkansas, you know, but they're using green timber in Arkansas as a draw to get people to call them up and book a hunt with them. And then if you tell them that, man, I want to hunt flooded green timber, that's what I've always wanted to do in Arkansas, you know, this is the time slot. If they've got an opening, they'll tell you, hey, oh, yeah, man, we'll put you right into it, you know. And then when you show up, their tactic is, man, they're not, the birds have left the timber. You know, we're not going to fire a shot there. We've got this field we're going to take you to because that's where the birds are. You know, so you need to ask them, tell me about your leases. Tell me about the property that you hunt. If there is something specific that you on your bucket list that you want to hunt, whether it's out of a layout boat and a Tupelo break and standing oak trees and willows on the river, whatever. If there is a specific style of hunting that you're going there with that guide to do and you do not know them and you hadn't been referred to them by somebody that's already done it, a prudent hunter will definitely ask them to tell them about it so you can determine if they really are the real deal in the niche that you're trying to get into.
No, I
as
fully
far as
agree.
Niche goes.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a specific type of hunt or a specific type of bird, yeah, you definitely need to get all those questions out of the way with the guide and with the references that they give you, because you'll be able to figure know, those answers out with the references and with the guide by asking. Just go through your whole list. And most of the guys will be patient with you. I mean, most of the guys will be patient with you as you ask all these questions.
Well, I think that you're putting that up there and you're giving a list of things for our followers and the readers that come on our website to look at. It's great. I hope everybody will take advantage of that too. By the way, this opening part of the podcast has been brought to you by Bayer Animal Healthcare, makers of Advantage Multi, the only heartworm preventative proven to be 100% effective against heartworms in the Mississippi Valley. Advantage Multi. Rocky, I'm pretty sure that I just heard Scott Rumble join us. Now, folks, for those of you out there who don't know him, Scott Rumble is a professional hunter from Ontario, Canada. He also recently left his job in the private sector, actually working for the public, to become a professional dog trainer. So he's going to be able to give us some great insight, not only on what's going on with the migration up there in Canada right now, but also we're going to be able to talk dogs just a little bit here with Scott. Skinny 12, buddy, how you doing?
How you doing, J-Ball? Glad to be here.
Man, I'm doing great, and I'm glad to have you. Meet my buddy, Rocky LaFleur.
Nice to meet you, Rocky.
Hey, Scott, have you ever met anybody from Mississippi?
I have. I've been down there a few times. I get to travel a lot.
Really?
I do.
Wow.
Scott's actually been to Lone Oak Retrievers in Dyersburg and trained. He and his son Sean actually came down and spent almost a week training with me a few years ago during the summer break. It was a great, or fall break. It was a great time.
I think I remember that.
I love the show.
Scott, let me ask you, man. How long has the season been open there so far?
We opened last Saturday, September 24th, for our duck and goose season. But we previously had a 10-day early goose season, which was a little tough this year, really warm weather. And we didn't get a migration until about 3 days before the end of the early goose season. But we're full swing now.
All right. A lot of Nimrods like myself from Mississippi, you know, we think of Canada. We think of a big blizzard going on. What's the weather like up there right now?
Well, today it was in the 60s. We'll use Fahrenheit so we don't really mess you up, but it was in the 60s today. Weather, we're starting to get some north winds and it's cooling down, but when the opening day started, it was in the high 70s, so it's pretty warm.
Wow. What time is it getting dark there right now?
Around 7:40 p.m. our time.
And you would be matched up with the central time zone?
Yes.
Or... Okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
Actually, he's an hour ahead of us, Rocky. I can answer that question. And Scott, and also I'll tell everybody too, Scott agreed to join us today at a pretty big price, because what time did you get up this morning? I know you were guiding hunters today, weren't you, Scott?
I was. I've been up since 3:30 this morning.
Oh, that hurt.
Yeah, so the Red Bull's pretty good.
Wow. I want to be the first to say thank you for joining us.
Oh, no problem. No rest for the wicked, right?
Amen, man. Well, I got a quick question for you. What kind of migration are you seeing going on right now with the ducks?
With the ducks? We've just started getting a big push of wood ducks down. And today when I was out in the field, we were starting to get a lot of pintail and a few mallards, but not a lot of mallards yet. There'll be another 2 to 3 weeks, I would think, depending on the weather. But a lot of wood ducks starting to show up now.
The mallards that you are getting, what's their plumage like? Are they still in eclipse or do they have green heads?
They are eclipse. We didn't shoot any with green heads.
Wow. What's the limit like there where you're at in Ontario? Because it varies greatly across Canada.
Yeah, we can shoot six ducks. So we can shoot six wood ducks, six pintail, six mallards, six gadwall, six widgeon, We're only allowed one black duck because we do have a lot of black ducks in the area. And
well, we all know Black Lives Matter.
That's right. And we can shoot four canvasbacks and four redheads, I believe. Or maybe even six now, but I'm not a diver hunter, so I can't really give you that info. We have liberal limits, that's for sure.
Scott, I know that most of the hunting you're doing up there is field hunting, correct?
Yes, it is.
What type of grain crops are y'all hunting over? What type of fields?
We started with grain, wheat fields, but we have corn, we have soybeans, we have barley, some the odd pea field, but there's not many pea fields.
What are the, when you say all of those, what do the ducks prefer?
Early on, they're in the grain field, so they're in the wheat. As it gets colder, we'll shoot mostly all our birds in corn fields as the weather gets
or
colder.
Or peas when you have them, right?
Yeah, peas is an early season thing here. They do a different variety of pea in Ontario than they do out west. So it's usually a 1st of September, middle of September kind of crop here.
And for those of you that have never been to Canada, when they talk about pea fields, don't be thinking about like green peas, like in the Le Sueur can. The Canadian pea agriculturally is very, very similar to the soybean that we grow here in the South.
That's correct.
But you're seeing less and less pea fields. Why is that?
Just the type of soil in our area. Like where we're hunting, we have a lot of clay, and the peas don't grow in the clay very well up here.
So, how much do you hunt over water?
When I fun hunt, I hunt a lot of water. I'm a big time marsh hunter, but we do a little bit of, when we outfit, we do a little bit of water hunting, mostly swamps and on the rivers. Lots of water up
cool.
there.
What is it a typical morning like with you as far as decoy and waterfowl?
I try to put them feet down in the hole, 15 yards out front, back flapping. Every day, all day.
Deep down in the hole, 15 yards back left. Sounds like pin placement at the Masters.
That's right. We had that
That's
this morning.
Great, Scott.
44 of them did it perfect this morning.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's great stuff. And I want to tell folks, too, Scott Rumble is a Canadian. And most of the guys that I've met that guide in Canada that are from there, they can blow the heck out of a goose call, but not so much on a duck call. Scott can flat out make a duck call sing, but more importantly, he can make it sound like a duck and convince them to come in and die. You're probably one of the best callers that I've ever heard on a duck call from Canada. How did you get so good?
Just practicing. I started when I was 14 years old and basically became obsessed with fooling the fowl. So every spare moment I got, people that I knew that did duck call, I inquired about learning how to make myself better. And it's just a matter of putting the time in and playing around with the call until you get it.
All right. Scott, J. Paul told me before we started this podcast how good of a retriever expert that you were. So I'm going to let you join in with J. Paul when I ask him his training with jpaul.com tip of the day. So I'm going to ask him and let him answer, and I would love if you jumped in after he answered on this question.
Glad to have some help, let me tell you.
Hey, Scott, he needs all he can get, I promise. So.
I don't know about that. I think he does all right.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, guys, here is the training question of the day. Guy wrote in and he said he wanted to know in his everyday training how much reward-based training should he have in his everyday retriever training with his pup? Pup is 6 months old.
Repeat that.
I said the pup is 6 months old.
No. What was the question again? How much?
How much reward-based training or reward?
Reward-based. I missed that.
Should he be giving to his six-month-old pup that's just starting training? How much should he mix in with, you know, with the negative?
Okay, so I'll go first, and then I want to hear Scott's take on this too. First of all, define reward-based, because in a lot of people's vernacular, in mine, reward is getting to pick up the dummy. I mean, we work with our dogs early on, from the time they're 10 weeks, even before that, in the litter, you know, with duck wings and little toys and stuff. We work building their desire to retrieve. So for most of my dogs, getting to go out there, grab a dummy or a duck and bring it back is a reward in itself. You know, for other people, when you talk about reward-based training, you're talking about, you know, treat training. You know, dog does something right, give it a treat. So let's differentiate between the two right off the bat. If you're talking about treat training, that kind of thing, I don't do it at all. I mean, zero is reward based. But
and that's how and that's how I would take this question. So
yeah, and that's kind of what I thought he meant too. So we don't do treat training at all. I'm not saying it's bad by any means. I think it's something you definitely need to phase out. I think it works great with younger puppies. By the time a dog's 6 months old, I would take treat rewards out completely, but I would replace that with a different kind of reward. Praise for a job done right, getting to make a retrieve, throwing the dog some happies. All of those things are a reward. Very, very little of my training, and I bet you Scott's going to tell me the same thing, very, very little of our training is negative training. Even less of it is punishment training. I mean, it is very, very rare that I will give a dog a correction that is punishment-minded. I can't, you know, I mean, that's the kind of thing you do in housebreaking, but we don't do a whole heck of a lot of. It's corrections instead. You know, we're giving the dog corrections in the form of a collar correction or in the form of a verbal correction. And by the way, this is something I really want to put out there because it's kind of a pet peeve of mine. You know, I have had people ask me about training with the e-collar versus, oh gosh, what is the term that I'm looking for? The psychologist coined operant training method. Well, let me tell you, in my experience, when a guy says, oh, I use operant training method and I don't use an e-collar, he's full of crap because everybody uses some negative. There's no one that I know out there training a dog who never tells the dog no, who never gives a verbal correction of some sort at least. So to say that everything is positive is BS. Sooner or later, you're going to give a negative no. You're going to give a reprimand, anything that you do like that, it's negative. On the flip side, those of us that use a collar to train, we use operant training method. We give a lot of praise. We use the collar for correction and to help the dog get it right. So I know I got off on a wild tangent from how much treat training or reward-based training, you know, to bring it back around, circle back and summarize, a little bit of treat training with a puppy's great. By 6 months old, I would continue with reward training, but it would not be food-based. It would be more praise-based, more getting to do an activity that the dog enjoys. How about you, Scott? What's your take, buddy?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same lines as you. I'll start really young puppies with treats, just introduce them to, like, the dog blinds, the kennel, stuff like that, and then I totally phase it out by, I would say, 4 months. Like, I'm not treating the dog. Everything is positive reward by me. Like, you know, good dog, petting the dog. The dog puts forth an effort. I'm going to vocalize and be happy and excited, so that puppy knows that he's doing a good job. I'm not a big believer on treat training at all. My dog's, the reward is the same as yours, getting a bumper or a bird. That's what they live. Amen.
And let me tell you, I've trained, and Scott has too, with a lot of guys, our peers, who are very well regarded around the country. And I would say that in the retriever training community, Rocky, that is pretty much universal. It was a great question. If you're the guy that asked it and you're using a lot of treats right now, I would advise you to start phasing that out, because one thing that would be a whole other subject I didn't hit on, there actually comes a time where smarter dogs start doing things to try to get the treat. So now they're manipulating you, and that's another good reason for phasing out. But excellent question there, Rocky.
Excellent. And they'll start eating your sandwiches out in the duck blind. And that's not good.
Amen, brother. That's not good at all.
Look, this part of the podcast was brought to you by TrainingWithJPaul.com. Now, Training with J. Paul is a website that you can go to if you're training your retriever at home. J. Paul has tons of written content, tons of videos that you can watch and will help you and guide you as you retrieve your dog at home. One of my favorite parts of Training with J. Paul is Ask J. Paul. Just hit that button on the website, type in your question. Usually 24 to 48 hours, J. Paul will have an answer back to you either by video or by text. So it's trainingwithjpaul.com. Use the discount code on the X. Just type that in the discount code. You receive 1 month for free.
Rocky, once again, thanks for that plug. And again, thanks to the person that submitted that. Went a little bit long there with my answer, but it was a great, great question. Guys, we're just about out of time. I know you're ready to go hit the sack, Scott. You got to be worn out. But before we do, we want to close it out with our final thoughts here. And I've got a quick question to lead off into this. You know, a lot of times we have our resident fat boy, Houston Kennedy, co-hosting with us. And we hadn't done this in the last few podcasts, but Houston always wants to know at the end of the podcast from our guest the same question. And since you're from Canada, I thought that we probably, in honor of Houston, ought to throw it in here. So here it goes. All right, so you're a guy from Ontario. You're out there hunting every day. I know you carry a well-stocked blind bag. As far as food goes, Scott, if I look in your blind bag while we're out hunting, what am I going to find in there to eat?
You're going to find granola bars, apples, and a bag of chips.
Granola bars, apples. I was expecting to hear like raisins, trail mix, or something else heart healthy, and not a bag of chips.
You gotta have a bag of chips. Doritos.
Pretty cool. At least you didn't say Tim Hortons.
Well, no, that's in the thermos. Gotta have the coffee.
Yeah. Tim Hortons, for those of you who've never been there, it's kind of like Canada's version of McDonald's, but instead of cheeseburgers and Coke, they sell donuts and coffee that's famous throughout pretty much every province in Canada. But, all right, well, for Houston there, we got the fat
actually,
boy answer.
Yeah, I actually thought after he said granola bar and then an apple, I actually thought he was going to say like a veggie sandwich or something.
No, not that
too.
Far. No, not that healthy.
And he didn't say Bushmills Canadian whiskey either, so that was kind of a relief.
Yeah, some days it's whatever you can grab to get in your blind bag, and you're happy with it when you're on the run at 3:30 in the morning.
Amen. And speaking of 3:30, we've kept you on way too long. Scott, since you're our guest, I'm going to turn it over to you now. Anything you'd like to add about hunting up there, who you work for, any final thoughts, please feel free to throw them out there right now.
Sure. I guide for Wing Feather Outfitters in Walkerton, Ontario. And a lot of people think that it's hard to get your guns across the border and come and hunt with us, but it's not. It's a quick paperwork at the border. We're about a 2.5-hour drive north of Sarnia. And We'd love to have you. We got a brand new hotel, lots of birds, and lots of experience. Check us out. We got a website, wingfeatheroutfitters.com.
Cool. Well, man, we hope a bunch of our guys do, because in Ontario is much easier to get into than Saskatchewan or Alberta. It's not nearly as far a drive. Customs handles Americans making that transfer on a very, very regular basis. I can tell you from experience, and I'm not plugging for Ontario tourism, I'm just throwing the facts out there. Crossing over into Ontario through Canadian customs is about as painless as it gets. So wanted everybody to know that. All right, Rocky LaFleur, final thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, hey, this guy's from Mississippi. Every time we think of Canada, we think of blizzards and glaciers. So it's like that all the time in my mind in Canada. No, just, I'm just no redneck from Mississippi, but anyway.
And everybody has a sled dog, right?
That's right. That's right. No, but my final thought is ode to fall. Fall is here. Hey, let the good-looking girls in camouflage come out. The guys that know nothing about hunting post up on Facebook like they do. Ode to fall, baby. Here it is.
That was a good one, Rocky. You know what? Your intellect runs a heck of a lot deeper than I ever gave it credit for when we started doing this podcast. I'm impressed once again. You've thrown something out there that made an observation that actually impresses me. Well, man, I am here tonight about to pull into Ottawa, Illinois. Hardcore Brands, we have our annual sales meeting commencing tomorrow, so it's a good time for me to mention that the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com, has been brought to you by Hardcore Brands and Hardcore Decoys. By the way, Scott Rumble is a member of the Hardcore Pro staff, and he can tell you firsthand that Hardcore makes some of the most innovative and durable waterfowling products out there. We know it's not easy being hardcore, but we are. Well, guys, it's 59 degrees here in Ottawa, Illinois this evening and going to get a lot cooler. I'm still wearing the shorts that I had on this afternoon when it was 80-something and I left Tennessee. I can tell you that in the northern part of the Mississippi Flyway, fall is in the air. We're about to have a migrational push start. I expect we're going to start seeing a bunch more wood ducks, like Scott was saying, in several potholes along I-55 today. I saw Gadwall and Widgeon. Man, it's getting here. I'm getting excited. I can't wait for it to happen, and I want to thank all you guys once again this week for joining us for the midweek version of the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.